I really love Proverbs, practical wisdom for living, spiritual wisdom, how the two interconnect. So, love Proverbs. Verse 1, a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. If you asked most people, what would you rather have, a large fortune, be filthy rich and comfortable for the rest of your life, living in luxury, or would you rather have a good reputation? What do you think most people would say? Huh? People go with the silver and gold, right? But Solomon would tell you, God would tell you, no. A good reputation, being an honorable individual, trustworthy, honest, having good character is more important than being filthy rich and probably cutting corners to get rich, being ethically challenged. So choose not material wealth, but moral wealth, spiritual wealth. That's the better choice. Verse 2, rich and poor have this in common, the Lord is the maker of them all. The Lord is the great equalizer among human beings. We tend to judge a person's worth by various factors, how much money they make, you know, how powerful they are. But no, God is the great equalizer. He made all human beings. All human beings are made in the image of God, incredibly valuable, incredibly precious. And that's how we want to consider every human being, no matter how rich or poor, how successful or unsuccessful they are. The Lord made them. They're made in His image. They have inherent value, inherent worth. And we want to treat people with honor and respect just because of that, apart from any accomplishments, apart from social status or monetary status or, you know, how much power they have. Most people don't think that way. We are to think that way. Verse 3, one of my absolute favorite proverbs, a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Prudence, wisdom are pretty much the same thing. And one of the things that makes a man or a woman wise, prudent, is having enough life experience where they can see danger coming. You know that there's problems up ahead, and you're anticipating them. You're aware that life can throw you, life is full of problems. When you're a child, you're like oblivious of, you know, so many potential dangers and pitfalls, right? That's part of being a child. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The older you get, you should be able to see problems coming before they happen, and you are proactive. Not just see them, but take some anticipatory action to mitigate against the worst of them. A prudent man, a wise man, sees danger and takes refuge. In contrast, the simple person, the naive person, they're just like unaware, oblivious, uninvolved. Just think, you know, whatever happens, happens. Whatever life throws at me, you know, I'll deal with it when it happens. No, you can do better than that. You can anticipate a lot of problems before they happen, do things that will prevent them from happening or make their impact less. Those of you who have known me for any length of time know that I anticipate really bad things happening to the United States and to the world economically. We have sown the seeds of economic stupidity. We're about to reap the whirlwind. And there are certain things that can be done to mitigate against what I think is going to be a very difficult situation for almost everyone. Most people don't see it. If you tell them, they won't believe you. But the wise person can, you know, see what's happening and take proactive measures. Joe, would you go back and close those doors? Or, Duba's going to do it. Any questions, comments on the first three verses? Verse 4, humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth, honor, and life. Your version might be slightly different, but humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth, honor, and life. Well, most people want wealth, honor, and life, but they don't want to do things the right way to get wealth, honor, and life. They want to be aggressive. They want to be takers. They want to take advantage. They, whatever. Work hard. The Lord would say, you really want wealth, honor, and life? Do it my way. Humility. Don't think of yourself more highly than you should. Don't think of yourself more highly than, you know, don't think of God lesser than you should. Don't think of others lesser than they should. Be humble. Recognize that you're a creature and give honor to God. Give honor to others. Fear the Lord. That is the recipe for lasting wealth, true wealth, honor, and life. Verse 5, in the path of the wicked lie thorns and snares, but he who guards his soul stays far from them, far from the wicked. This tells us that there are people who are wicked, who are defying God and God's wise principles. They might not realize it, but they're creating thorns and snares, a trap, you know, traps for themselves. They might think that everything is great, and it might seem to be, but they're creating circumstances that are going to cause them serious problems. And if you hang out with them and you start to imitate them, you're creating thorns and snares for yourself. So the one who cares about his life, guards his soul, stays far from the wicked, which means you have to be able to identify the wicked. You've got to know what the righteous look like, and you've got to know what the wicked look like. And not confuse them. Verse 6, another great proverb that many of us know. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. The way this is most commonly understood is that you start a child from a young age on the right path. Path towards God, the path of the Bible, the path of religion and character and good character, right? Train up a child the way he should go, and when he's older, he won't depart from it. And that is true. our early influences do tend to have, profound effect on our lives. So there is no question that if we have children, we should teach them, train them. The word train here is chanoch, dedicate, start from a young age, like the word Hanukkah, same word, Hanukkah, dedicate your child to God, the Bible, truth, good character from a young age, a very young age. If you wait to the time your children are, 10, 11, 12, before you get them involved in, a faith community and the Word of God, you are making things much more difficult. They're much more difficult. So train up a child from the way he should go at an early age. That's the, one way to understand this proverb. Another way is emphasizing in the way he should go. So another way of understanding this proverb is know your child. Know their strengths, know their weaknesses, help them find their strengths, help them find a life direction that goes with their strengths. I've given you the example of my son, Ari, before. Ari's a smart guy. After high school, though, he went to Oakland University, just, general studies. Wasn't really motivated, wasn't really working for him. Martha and I thought, okay, well, he's not happy at Oakland University. How about the King's College in New York City? It's a Christian liberal arts college. And it's in New York City. It meets in the Empire State Building. He'll be living in New York. And a more Christian, liberal arts program. So we sent Ari to the King's College, and that didn't really click with him either. So he didn't want to continue it. King's came back here, and Martha and I are like racking our brains. How do we help our son, right? How do we guide him? How do we direct him? And so, we thought, maybe the military. Maybe the Army, the Navy, the Marines. And then, we looked back, and Ari took, had an interest in, Japanese sword fighting when he was in high school. He took, Japanese swordsmanship. And his favorite book in high school was The Art of War. And so, as we reflected, Ari had this militaristic gifting, and in every society there are soldiers, there are warriors. Not everyone is, but God makes certain men in particular. Occasionally, there's a warrior princess, but it's usually men. Warriors, and we need them. And so Martha and I encouraged Ari to consider the military. He took the test, and he did really well, and he could have had his choice of, any branch of the service, and he chose the Navy, and specifically the submarine service, which is even more challenging. And so that's what he did for 5 years, and served our country well in pretty much our top submarine, the Jimmy Carter. So train up a child in the way he should go. Know your child. Recognize their gifting, their abilities. Not every child is the same. They're all different. And see if you can't direct your child in the way he should go. Yeah.
If you were to take the phrase "when he was old" out of that text, would you change the meaning of
If you take when he was old out of that.
In other words, if you just said, train up a child and he will not depart from it, in the way he should go, he will not depart from it.
I don't think it really changes it much. It, you know, how we start things tends to influence us, you know. A good beginning tends to have good ends. How we start could set a whole life direction for us. Now, this is not a, remember, proverbs are not promises. You can't claim, you know, Lord, I claim Proverbs 22:6, I've trained up my child in the way he should go, therefore when he's old, he will not depart from it. No, that's not. This is a, Proverbs are general principles, right? They're not promises you can claim. So it is wisdom to train up a child from a young age, you know, to fear God, to fear the Word of God, to emphasize good character, good habits, good disciplines. There's much more likelihood as his life progresses, he'll continue in that good direction. Even if he forgets it for a time, later he might, you know, return to it, which is, you know, very common.
Sometimes just the opposite happens.
Sometimes just the opposite happens. What do you mean, Elaine?
Well, from experience, I mean, my son was brought up, went to Hebrew school, got bar mitzvah, doing right from wrong, and never, when he did something, I would say that's a silly thing because nobody does something that's wrong, you know, and knows that it's wrong. So now he's just completely...
Yes, and that's why, okay, so Elaine said she raised her child, you know, her son in the right way, and pretty much as soon as he was on his own, he jettisoned most of it. And that's also true of children and human nature. They want to become independent from mom and dad, and so sometimes they will jettison too much. They will rebel,
yeah.
Right? Children, a lot of children are rebels. They will rebel in their teenage years, but it's not over with him.
No.
It's not over.
Right.
And so, you know, he might go through a life... Huh?
You know what his hobby is? He tells me.
I'm afraid to ask.
No.
What's his hobby?
Making money.
Making money.
See, that's the primary.
Okay, well, I've heard of worse hobbies.
Huh? What'd you say?
I've heard of worse hobbies. Listen, there's no guarantees. This is not an ironclad guarantee, but it's still the right thing to do, to train up a child, you know, from a young age and set him in a good life direction. You know, he's going to be more benefited, more blessed than letting him run wild with no values, no principles from an early age and then expecting something good to happen. Marianne? It's hard not to be anxious when we see our children going in, you know, directions that...
it's worse to see grandchildren going.
Children, grandchildren. It's, yeah. You pray for them, you do the best you can, and then you ultimately, you know, trust the Lord. Whatever happens, happens.
There are very few good parental role models
these days. Verse 7, the rich rule over the poor. The borrower is servant to the lender. This is just the way the world works. The rich, money is power. It is. And so the rich do rule over the poor. It's increasingly happening in our society. The income inequality is getting ever wider, and these, you know, billionaires have more and more power. I think the average citizen has less and less power. And the borrower is servant to the lender. When you borrow money and you owe someone, that gives him power over you. That's just the way. What do you mean you're taking a vacation and not paying me back what you owe me? What do you mean? What do you mean you're going out to nice restaurants and you owe me $5,000? We'll see about that. So we don't want to be borrowers if we can avoid it. We do not want to live beyond our means. Not only do you add financial pressure and add, you know, put yourself in a financial hole, you give those who you owe the money more power to control you and control your life in ways that you don't want. So live within your means. Try not to borrow. If you do use a credit card, try to pay it off at the end of the month. Use it wisely. All right. Yes? Absolutely. Verse 8, he who sows wickedness reaps trouble, and the rod of his fury will be destroyed. There are people who are just wicked, and they have no, you know, scruples about doing horrible things, and they think it's going to advantage them, and it might for a time, but ultimately they're sowing trouble for themselves. They're creating, you know, trouble for themselves. And their power, which is built on a corrupt basis, the rod of his fury, their all their anger, all their power, all their fury will be destroyed. So don't choose that option. Follow God's wise principles. Don't create unnecessary trouble for yourself. Verse 9 is kind of the opposite. A generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. When we do something good for someone else, it benefits not just that someone else, it benefits us. When we are generous with others, comes back and helps us. It blesses us. It makes us better people. It makes God more inclined to bless us. So generosity is to be encouraged and to motivate us to be more generous people, because we're selfish by nature. We should know that when we're generous to others, we're also doing something good for ourselves. Verse 10, drive out the mocker, and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. The mocker is someone who makes fun of, you know, God and God's wise principles. That's the mocker. The scorner. He's a foolish man, but he's like more active in his foolishness. He is like making fun of God, the things of God, the word of God, the wisdom of God, the principles of God. And that kind of person creates trouble and instability. Try to identify him, try to avoid him. Verse 11, he who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. Now, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we talk with grace, with truth, if we cultivate, you know, a pure heart, a good character, love for God, love for righteousness, love for purity, people can see that. And if it's accompanied by gracious speech, true words, kind words, gracious words, people will take notice. Important people, powerful people, even the king. And the opposite is true. If we have a filthy mouth, not gracious, profanity-laden speech, impure heart, bad values, it'll attract some people, but not the right people, not the people really worth attracting. I heard about this young man who was part of this tragedy in the the Florida shooting, and led these demonstrations, you know, to get rid of, you know, guns. He's like, I don't know, 17, 16. You know, I got to admire him for doing something like that. But I didn't hear him directly, but I heard that his, you know, the interviews he gave, his speeches were just filled with one profanity after the other after the other. And, you know, that's typical of a lot of people today. I just find that very unattractive and says something about that person. We don't want to be like that. He who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. Verse 12, the eyes of the Lord keep watch over knowledge, but he frustrates the words of the unfaithful. God is very much a moral God, a God of righteousness, a God of wisdom and truth. And he is watching over everyone, aware of everyone. Someone who is wise, someone who is knowledgeable, saying wise and knowledgeable things, God's watching over that person. He's like on his side. He wants him to succeed. He wants the wise things he says to come to pass. He's like helping that person. On the other hand, he frustrates the words of the unfaithful. Those who are in rebellion against God, those who are not faithful to God. God is not favoring them. God is not wanting to help them along with their words, their plans, their ideas. He's opposing them, frustrating them. He doesn't want them to succeed because, in a sense, success will be their undoing. They'll think they're doing fine when in reality they're in a very bad place. So, you want God on your side, you want God watching over you, helping you, being the wind in your sails. Be knowledgeable, be wise. Speak wisely, speak with knowledge, speak with wisdom. Verse 13, the sluggard, the lazy person says, there is a lion outside. I will be murdered in the streets. Another one of my favorite proverbs. There are lazy people. One of the things you cannot be in life is lazy. Unless you're born, I guess, incredibly, you know, rich or, you know, a trust fund baby. But even then, if you're lazy, you know, you tend to squander your inheritance and blow everything. Hard work, diligent work is one of the most important things we need in life, no matter who we are. There are people, though, who don't want to work hard, who want to be lazy. They don't want to be known as lazy, so they're always looking for excuses and justifications, you know, why they can't show up on time, why they can't be at work, why they can't hold down a job. There's always an excuse, right? Oh, I heard there's a lion in the streets. If I go out, you know, I'll be killed by the lion. I can't go to work. I find something similar with Christians and Messianic Jews who are lazy regarding their spiritual work. We have certain spiritual duties, certain spiritual responsibilities. You know, we should be reading the Bible on a regular basis on our own. We should be praying, talking to the Lord. It's not always easy. It takes effort. Reading the Bible, you know, can take effort. One of the things, you know, purposely trying to tell others about the Lord, you know, evangelism, witnessing on a personal level, that's not easy. That takes effort. We should be doing that. Coming to your faith community, your messianic synagogue, your church on a regular basis, that takes work. That takes effort. If you're a parent, you know, getting the kids up on Saturdays and breakfast and dressing them and showing up on time, you know, that takes work. And so there are people who are just, you know, spiritually lazy. And I can tell by their level of involvement, their level of coming, you know, just to services on Saturdays. And there's always, like, an excuse. The weather was too bad. Or the weather was too good, and it was so nice. You know, it was so nice, and I wanted to, you know, play golf or whatever. The weather was just so nice, right? And so there's always an excuse. Usually the weather's too bad or the weather's too good. Anyway, don't be like that. Don't be lazy spiritually. Don't be spiritually lazy. Don't be lazy in the other areas of your life. Verse 14, the mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. He who is under the Lord's wrath will fall into it. Obviously, sexual temptation is one of the huge temptations that many people face, right? God created us sexual beings, male and female. Most of us have normal sexual desires. We are to restrain those desires, control those desires so that they're expressed in a one man, one woman, marital, committed relationship, right? Going outside of the marriage relationship for sexual gratification is wrong. Before marriage, during marriage. So, we don't want to be adulterers and adulteresses. But this has a different take. The mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. It's like, you know, you fall down that pit and you're in a lot of trouble. You might never climb out of that pit. You might die in that pit. Good chance you're going to die in that pit. The Lord has different ways of dealing with people who have offended him. You know, he can kill them directly. He can kill them indirectly. Can you think of any examples of God killing people directly? Huh? Ananias and Sapphira? Yes, God killed them directly for pretending and lying. Korah and his rebellion, the earth opened up and swallowed him, right? And those are some examples of direct divine judgment. Indirectly, God can use others to judge. He used the Israelis our armies to judge the wicked Canaanites whose iniquity had become full. Well, he didn't judge, you know, he didn't kill them directly. He used the armies of Israel. Someone who the Lord is wanting to judge, one way he can judge them is by allowing them to get in a situation where they commit adultery. They might think this is exciting and fun, and, you know, of course, there's an element of excitement and fun in that kind of situation. But it can also be a kind of divine judgment where, you know, you've really offended God, he's had it with you, and this is how he's going to judge you, ruin your life, damage your life. Yes, what's your name? Jackie, that's right. Hi, Jackie. If you're in an adulterous relationship? Yes, 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 yes. That is a common theme in the Bible, especially the Hebrew Scriptures. Spiritual unfaithfulness and sexual unfaithfulness go hand in hand. God often compared unfaithful Israel to an adulteress. Repeatedly through the prophets. And so there is, you know, a commonality. Adultery is a really serious thing. Obviously, if you don't believe in God and you don't have any values or morals or a biblical worldview, you know, what's the big deal, right? It's just a bodily urge. But it's a huge deal. And so we want to take it really seriously. And you just think, well, if I do this, is this might this be God's way of really getting me? Most people, of course, will never think that way, but this is what this proverb is telling us. Donna.
You know, adultery. All right, that goes to fornication before marriage.
Fornication is not adultery.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I'm saying, will it be the same?
Will it be the same? Adultery is much worse. There are degrees of sin. Fornication is wrong, is bad, out of God's will. But adultery is even worse. Because you're doing, you know, you're destroying potentially, you know, an entire family, and causing vows to be broken and huge damage that could have generations of horrible consequences. I mean, fornication can too. I know at least one guy who, you know, had a one-night stand, and got this girl pregnant, and, you know, one night of drunken pleasure has had lifelong consequences for this guy. That being said, adultery is even worse. Yeah. Covenant.
So adultery, you're breaking covenants.
That's really bad to break your covenant with your partner,
right,
and with God. He's involved in that covenant too. So it's yes, it's a breaking of covenant. Yeah, potentially destroying a whole family. You're damaging children you may have, you know, with your spouse. I mean, don't get involved in adultery. There's a lot of reasons why not to, and this is giving us like an alternative perspective. If God is really angry with someone, wants to judge someone, he might allow them to commit adultery and destroy their life in a slow, possibly painful, humiliating way. Can you think of any politicians or any well-known people who have committed adultery? It's come out and it has damaged their life, destroyed their life. How about President Trump? With his, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things I like about President Trump, but this is like painful. You know, these women that are coming forward and, right, it's he's being publicly exposed, his children, his, right? Not good. Okay. I'm sorry, Jake, I couldn't hear you.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby. Aye. America's dad. America's dad. Turned out to be America's rapist or America's... wow. The humiliation. Now he's facing possibly 30 years in jail, the rest of his life in jail, right? Yeah, Howard.
We live in a, obviously in a culture of pornography today. Where would you fit that in?
Where would I put pornography?
Let's say a husband is involved in pornography. I mean, essentially he's committing adultery.
It's a kind of adultery. What is pornography? I have become much more aware of, knowledgeable about the really damaging part aspect. The damaging. Okay, let's try this again. In the past several years, I've become much more aware of how damaging, how destructive pornography is. It's not an innocent little pastime. It is really, really destructive. Of course, it's just perverse to watch other people having sex. I mean, that's a perversion. Sexual activity is a private thing between a man and a woman, and that's where it should stay, right? No one else is involved. No one else's business, right? It corrupts the poor people who do it. I mean, it corrupts the people who are actually doing it. It corrupts the people who are making money off of it, the film crews, the production crews, you know. It corrupts the people who watch it. It's a wickedness. You're setting something vile in front of your eyes. It stimulates parts of the brain and actually like changes your physically, it changes your brain. And the stimulation, and like it's like a drug. It's like you need more of it, and stronger, and more. So, and then men who are doing it, who are married, they have visions, and you know, it twists their relationship, their sexual relationship with their wives, and it makes them emotionally detached. Sex, you know, their relationship with the, it just becomes about sex and not the emotional component and the loving component. And it is like a gateway drug to other things, to prostitution and to adultery. And so, and it, yeah, it, it really destroys the relationship between the husband and the wife, damages their emotional interaction. The state of Florida, this is becoming known not just by the Christian community. I must say, from what I've learned, the Christian community is not leading the forefront in the charge against pornography. It's the world, the secular world, is now realizing how damaging and destructive pornography is for all these reasons that I said. And so the state of Florida was actually considering passing a law recently against outlawing pornography in the state of Florida. This is recently, because these horrible negative side effects are becoming more known by everyone. So and then it causes you to be a liar and a cover up, right? Especially, men who are doing it, Christian men, married men, they're ashamed, they're embarrassed. They lie to their wives, right, about their pornography use. They won't tell their wives. It turns you into a liar and hidden and devious. Causes you to be ashamed and embarrassed to, talk to God, right? Very destructive on many levels. And now so pervasive. And kids are getting into it at younger and younger ages. And smartphones and half the bandwidth of the internet is used for pornography. That's what I read. Half the bandwidth of the entire internet is used for pornography. Duba.
Just to add on that, there's now a conclusion in Japan that young teenagers are completely emotionally separated because they can away from that, world of games and pornography and the whole, they're not interested in normal
male-female relationships and getting married and having families and kids. And so the Japanese population is shrinking, which is not what Japan wants. So it's having nationwide consequences. Okay. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. We're born into this world knowing like nothing and ignorant and foolish. We're just not wise. We kids do all kinds of stupid, dangerous, foolish things, right? Contrary to what many psychiatrists, psychologists of this generation and the last generation or two have said, physical discipline is appropriate. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. You get to a point with certain children, you've given them all the timeouts, you've sent them to their room, they're still having temper tantrums, they're still screaming, they're still banging the door, and I hate you, and to me, one good spanking is, much more effective than, multiple timeouts. He who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth, and he who gives gifts to the rich, both come to poverty. There's a proper view about money, use of money, oppressing the poor, squeezing the poor because you can, And also giving money, giving gifts to influence the rich are both inappropriate, wrong ways, you know, of dealing with money and power. This is what a selfish person does. You know, this is all about self. Everything is devoted to, you know, money, self-promotion. If you can squeeze the poor, you squeeze the poor. And if you can use money to, you know, buy favors from the rich, that's what you use money for. But that also is an inappropriate way to deal with money, a God-dishonoring way. Last section, the sayings of the wise. I am starting to think that this next section, the next chapter or so, are 30 sayings. Sayings of the wise. Pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. Apply your heart to what I teach, for it is pleasing when you keep them in your heart and have all of them ready on your lips. Okay, so I want you to listen to these words, which talk about focus and intentionality. Pay attention. Listen. Apply your heart. Keep them in your heart. Have them ready on your lips. This should be our attitude towards, you know, these sayings, Proverbs, but the entire Word of God. You got to work. This takes work. This takes effort. This takes intentionality. Pay attention. Listen. Apply. Keep them in your heart. Have them ready on your lips. Where am I? Verse 17, 18, 19. So that your trust may be in the Lord, I teach you today, even you. Have I not written 30 sayings? Okay, so I really looked at the Hebrew because I'm used to the New American Standard Bible, and it said, you know, like, excellent things. That's how I grew up understanding this passage. Haven't I written excellent things? But the Hebrew word can be translated 30, shloshim. Shloshim can also mean, in a sense, like, excellent, choice. But I'm starting to lean towards 30, shloshim, 30. 30 sayings for you, sayings of counsel and knowledge, teaching you true and reliable words so that you could give sound answers to him who sent you. So pay attention, be focused, think about these things, put them in your heart, trust in the Lord. You must have, you know, if you're going to be wise, you must have faith in God. Counsel, knowledge, teaching, so that you can give sound answers to him who sent you. Good character, wisdom, truth, God, paying attention. This is how we get success. Do not exploit the poor because they are poor. Do not crush the needy in court, for the Lord will take up their case and will plunder those who plunder them. So even if you have the power, don't take advantage of those with less power. Don't exploit the poor just because you can. Don't crush the needy in court. Don't use the legal system if you have the money and power to take advantage of someone else. Wow. You know, our legal system, I really think, has deteriorated so much. There is like one standard of law for the rich and powerful who can afford the best lawyers and stall things and, you know. And there is a whole other, set of laws that are much harsher for the average person. Anyway. But God is the ultimate judge, and if you do that, he will go after you. So some incentive not to do that. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Identify the person who is constantly angry, losing his temper, has anger management control issues. Try to avoid that person. Otherwise, you might learn his ways. Otherwise, you might get affected by his behavior. Do you know anyone like that? I know a couple people like that. Verse 26, financial advice. Do not be a man who strikes hands in pledge. Guarantees. Guaranteeing someone else's debt or loan. Or puts up security for debts. For if you lack the means to pay, your very bed will be snatched from under you. We have to be so careful about going into debt ourselves and guaranteeing the debt of others. That is a fairly sure recipe to lose a lot. Verse 28, do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your forefathers. Don't cheat. You know, you're in a field and there's a boundary stone. If you move it a little bit this way, you know, you get more property, right? It's to your advantage. Don't cheat. Don't cut corners when it comes to, you know, money, business. That's definitely one lesson to learn. You know, respect the property rights of others. This is one of the things that is essential to a really sound economy, is respecting property rights. There have been all kinds of study cultures that do not respect, you know, property rights, that you have governments that just confiscate property, on a whim. It is very destructive to the economic well-being of the entire country. Economies just don't grow healthy and strong when property rights are not, respected, which is why, to me, communism and socialism are, that's just one reason why. Communism and socialism, which really does not respect personal property. That's not, you know, what they're about. It's about the state having rights over everyone's, you know, property. Not personal property. It's the state, you know, is really destructive. One of the reasons why it doesn't work well and it is destructive. Marianne. Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that has been purposeful. That has been purposeful. Changing language, redefining words. I'm pro-choice. Well, what you really are is in favor of killing babies who are in their mother's womb, right? But to... You know, that's like one example, pro-choice. It's who doesn't want to be, you know, in favor of humans choosing, right? Free will, pro-choice. That, but it's two words combined together that really are trying to redefine something monstrous, right? George Orwell, in his book 1984, really warned the world about using words like that, redefining words, because words are powerful. They shape how we think and how we feel about things. So if you can redefine a word with your political agenda, it's really like a terrible, terrible thing. It is like moving an ancient boundary, which is why you mentioned it. I like that. All right, last one. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men. Work hard. Work diligently. Show up on time. Work with excellence. That's what this one's saying. Work with excellence. If you work hard and work with excellence, not just mediocrity, not just coming and doing a few things, and right? You work with focus, you strive for excellence in what you do, people will notice it, you know, and you will be probably benefited yourself. So work with excellence, strive for excellence. Comments, questions? Neela.
Talking about adultery.
Talking about what?
Adultery.
Why did God allow David to have so many wives? Okay. There is a difference between adultery and having many wives. Yes. Under the Sinai covenant, men were allowed to have more than one wife. They were allowed to. There are a lot of things that, there are several things that God allowed the Jewish people to do under the Sinai covenant after we left Egypt and Mount Sinai and Moses, right? We received this covenant and all these laws, and it was like Israel's constitution for our new nation, our newly freed nation. That's how you should, one way to understand the Sinai covenant is Israel's constitution, and it set up a judicial system and a political system and laws and customs. Men were allowed to have more than one wife. So you could have 2, 3, 4, 5 women as long as you married them and took care of them. You could have your little harem. It was not God's perfect will. His perfect will goes back to Genesis. You know, one man, one woman, one flesh, right? That's his perfect will. But the world had really deteriorated since the time of Genesis. And God allowed his people who were in this sea of darkness and, you know, to not be perfect, but to be better than the surrounding nations. So he allowed slavery. He allowed slavery. Is slavery God's perfect will? Does he want one man to own another human being? The answer is no, of course not. He allowed it. Everyone practiced slavery. He allowed polygamy, multiple wives. He allowed it until pretty much the time of Yeshua, where Yeshua says, all right, you've had 1,500 years now of moral, spiritual education. God expects more from us, one man, one woman. You know, we're returning things to the original. So, King David did have many wives. You will also notice, and Rabbi Glenn called this to my attention, every time that there's a situation in the Word of God that more than one wife is involved, when a man has more than one wife, there's always problems in that family. So David, you know, had problems in his family. One of his sons murdered his other son. Absalom murdered his brother. David, although he had many wives, that wasn't enough for David. And he also committed adultery, right? With Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah. So, we need to distinguish between adultery and polygamy. Polygamy is no longer allowed. I have had Christian men come to me and say, is that really true? Can't we go back? Can't we go back, to multiple wives? Actually, I think it was just one guy who, like, seriously came to me and wanted more than one wife. For most men, one wife is not just enough. She's more than enough. Okay, a little humor there. All right. Any other questions, comments? Duba. I'm not sure. Isn't there a law that you got to treat both, wives equally? I'm not sure. There might be. I can't remember at this moment. It is terrible, though, if you do have more than one wife and you love one more than the other and there's a sense of insecurity and competition. This is what helped, bring terrible problems into the life of Jacob, right? Leah and Rebecca, these two sisters, right? That is a horrible situation. What, Elaine?
I don't know if it's still on or not.
What?
It was a program on television where he had a lot of wives and continued marrying, but each one of them had their own house.
This is a reality TV show? I heard about this, right?
I think he lived in Utah. What is it called?
Sister Wives.
Right, Sister Wives.
Sister Wives.
They got along. They seemed, I watched it once
or twice. All right, listen, this is TV. They got along. How do you, don't know, you have no idea what is going on when the cameras are off and the stabbing in the back and the hatred and you have no idea, number one. Okay, well, these are obviously, I heard about this. There are Mormons, let's see, Islam allows multiple wives, right? I think the limit is 4 or 5. Islam. Muslims, they go back. Rich Muslim men will have, maybe not here in the United States, but, wherever, Saudi Arabia will have, multiple wives. And Mormons. This is one of the reasons why, Mormons and the rest of the people of the United States, have been like at odds since the founding of the Mormon cult, because they, the U.S. population was basically, very Christian-based. And so Joseph Smith, you know, got his revelations. And one of the things that was revealed to him is, you know, it's okay to have more than one wife. Now, let me just say this. Things go with things. Joseph Smith was a false prophet. There is very often a connection between not being able to stay within theological boundaries and not staying within sexual boundaries. Good theological boundaries? Okay, three things go together. You fear God, you respect the word of God, you stay within what God says, right? You stay within God's teaching. You stay within theological boundaries. Those who don't fear God and go, you know, outside of theological boundaries, they also tend to be greedy. They go, you know, financially corrupt and sexually corrupt. They go, you know, they a lot of sexual relationships. Things go with things. So one of the things you look for in a man of God is he stays within theological boundaries, right? Financial boundaries and sexual boundaries. One of the things that characterizes most false prophets is he can't stay within theological boundaries and very frequently along with that, financial boundaries and sexual boundaries. I say this because the Mormons are a whole denomination built on not staying within theological boundaries and sexual boundaries. Marianne.
I might like to add that whenever I see things that are involved polygamy in multiple marriages, it deteriorates the essence of what marriage is to be. And it devalues the woman and the male-female relationship. So when I've heard that Yemen men who are Islamic will have up to 30 wives, are these women really wives? In what way is the man spending any quality time with his children and with his family?
But they are marriages, and they are wives. Not good marriages, not good relationships, but, you know, I think we should say, I mean, I would call them marriage and wives. It is not what God wants. It is, you know, it falls way short, and it causes all kinds of other secondary, tertiary problems. All right. Joe, lead us in a final prayer, if you would.